Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, 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 hello. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you are. My name is Alex Q, and welcome to the 10th episode of Miscast. Always change. And with change, I'm going to ask my guests a riddle. You ready, guys? Different lights do make me strange. Thus, into different sizes, I will change. What am I?
Bizarre.
I mean, that is true, but that's not the answer to the riddle.
A window?
Ooh, that's a good one. It's not the answer, but that is a good one.
Can you give it to us again, please, Alex?
Of course I can. Different lights, and do play along, listener. Especially Stephen Jack, who love this part, because this is just for them. Different lights do make me strange. Thus, into different sizes, I will change.
Oh, is it your like your iris or your retina or something?
Yeah, look at that. Owen, straight in there.
Knew Owen would get it.
Gosh,
thanks. Riddles in the dark with Owen.
I like games. I don't know if anyone knew that.
Yeah, so now all the titles going forward are going to be riddles. So anyway, this is the 10th episode in our series of nonsense, where each episode, using the expertise of my superstar co-hosts and special guest, we discuss tabletop topics that we hope will help improve your generalship, expertise, and enjoyment of your gaming experience. It's the podcast that talks nonsense and sense, as you've just heard, and it's the podcast that's had some very weird food experiences this month. Very weird food experiences this month. I'll start with the first one. So, are you both all aware of the psychopaths that don't eat cereal at breakfast time, but in the evening?
Yeah, I did hear once, actually, that if you stop the ability to, like, eat cereal at any time of the day, then you're basically, your childhood is dead, and it's adulthood for you.
Sad.
I know.
Yeah.
But
so I'm one of these psychopaths. And I dislike cereal in the mornings. If I ever eat cereal, it's in the evenings. So anyway, this month, I thought, I've seen all these adverts for this protein cereal. Have you seen these?
No.
These like weird, like it's just protein. It's like, it feels like a protein shake, but in cereal form.
Sounds like you're going to get black poo.
Well, you're not far off. So I decided that I was a bit hungry, but not too hungry that I wanted a full meal. So I thought, I'll just try some of this protein cereal stuff. So get home, nice bit of cold milk, straight in the protein cereal, eating it away. Actually tastes not too bad. It's not too chemically. Just thinking, I'm enjoying this. 30 minutes pass.
Mm-hmm.
I feel something tingling in my stomach.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, interesting. Maybe it's my stomach enjoying this proteiny goodness. About 5 minutes after that, something happens. Literally, okay. Out of nowhere. Out of nowhere. I thought, what the fuck was that? I literally jumped up. It was obviously me passing wind, right? And I thought, well, that's weird. This continued for 12 hours. 12 hours. I'm not even joking. And I felt completely fine. Just constant. It was just constant. Like every 5-10 minutes, I was like, what is going on? I didn't feel unwell. I didn't, without going into too much information, I didn't need to go to the toilet. I didn't vomit, nothing. I was completely fine. Other than the fact every 10 minutes, I sounded like a foghorn.
So hold on.
Just constant.
You ate some sugar guffs, is that right?
Sorry. Wow.
Did you enjoy it? Were you like, have it?
Which bit, the cereal or the 12 hours?
12 hours of farting.
It was fine up until 2 a.m., where I actually woke myself up with one of them. Like, genuinely, I woke up. I was like, what the fuck was that? I was like, oh, it's still me from 6 hours ago, just going crazy. So,
has your partner ever woke themselves up farting before?
No.
Oh, Alex,
this sounds like a story already.
Oh, no, just randomly. Sometimes Alex will fart and she'll wake herself up.
Really appreciate that.
Maybe things, because this was, I haven't tried it again since.
I was going to say, sticking to porridge then, Ayn.
Yeah, sticking to the usual stuff. It's just never happened to me before where I've been completely fine. And anyway, so that's what has been happening this month. So if any of you out there have been pretty cereal or have the same reaction, do send it into our Twitter feed and we can talk about it. Right.
I wait with bated breath. Jesus, Alex.
you should see some of the crap that does get sent into our Twitter feed. It's you lot are nuts, by the way. So you can hear my first co-host already. He hasn't screamed out pervert yet. He goes by @positivevictim on Twitter. It's Darren Watson.
Hello, lovely.
Hi, Darren. Hello.
You grand?
How's it going?
Yeah, very well. I've been amused all day by Alex.
Not me, Alex, guest, by the way.
My fiance. Our guest is quite au fait with Alex, and so hopefully that you'll find this amusing. So this week she's been on a right one. So it all started when we went to the cinema. And we went to see, what film did we see? Must have been shit. I can't quite remember it. But anyway, that's not the funny bit. She got the tickets, and we go into the theatre, and it's not a very popular film. Probably why I can't remember it. There's not many people in there. And anyway, we're getting to our seats, and there are two people that are in the middle of the theatre, and we end up sitting right behind them. And I'm like, Alex, what, do you know, like those weird people that sit next to you on the bus when there's no one else on the bus?
Yeah, the whole bus is empty, and they literally come and sit next to you. Yeah.
I whispered to Alex, why the fuck are we these people? And she's gone, what? Well, when I selected the tickets, the two seats were blocked out, and I thought, this is great. That means they're unavailable, so we'll sit behind them, and then no one will be able to do it. I was like, Alex, they're blocked. They weren't available because people are fucking taking them. So that's kept me amused. Just for fucking hours. Then the next thing is we've recently got Sky, and you can speak into the remote, which is wonderful. And you can say things like Netflix, and it will change the TV magically over to Netflix. So we were watching The Diplomat. We were trying to watch the other day, but I couldn't, Alex had the remote. Normally I have the remote, but Alex had the remote this time. And I said, oh, find the Diplomat then. So she confidently picked up the remote, pressed the button to go and speak, said very confidently and with lots of gusto, Alex. and suffice to say, they didn't, this guy didn't find the Diplomat. which that in itself is just, I'm still that. And the third thing that's amused me is today, Alex sleeps with a smile on her face, and I'm often up way before her because I barely sleep.
She falls asleep with a smile.
Yeah, no, she sleeps all night with a smile on her face, and it pisses me off.
Like the fucking Joker.
It's mental. And then obviously I'm an insomniac, so like it's like she's telling me to fuck off all night. So sometimes I catch her waking up, and I caught her waking up this morning, and she's smiling and she nuzzles and she goes, and then all of a sudden her face scrunches up, and I was like, oh, are you all right, Alex? What's up? And she went, oh, you're angry. I was like, all right, why am I angry? Oh, you've just slipped on pudding. Right? And it made you drop your own pudding. I was like, okay. And then she sort of came to and she went, oh, sorry, I was dreaming. I was like, what the fuck are you dreaming about? She was like, well, apparently you were cross with me because I'd gone outside to rescue a parrot from our rabbit, which meant that you'd slipped on some pudding and dropped your pudding. And that's all I can remember. So my girlfriend has some fucking bizarre dreams, and that's...
I've got questions about your rabbit, for starters. Yeah. She's dreaming about. You've got the Monty Python rabbit that starts jumping on people's necks.
So, yeah, I've just been completely in awe of my fiancé, just doing wonderful things like that.
Oh, well, that's nice. That is nice. And outside of your fiancé dreaming about rabbits and pudding... Onwards AOS won a tournament, Darren.
Yes, we did. Yes, yes. Shout out to the guys. Lovely. But one of the thirstiest tournaments in the UK, Blood Tithe, was not last weekend, the weekend before. I believe, were you there, Owen?
I was there, yes. I was there.
Lovely.
Yeah. I think, when was it? It was, not the weekend past, the weekend before, in Redhill, just outside London.
And Onwards took a team, head up by Coach Luke. Luke, Tobias, Philip, Dan Bradshaw was a guest appearance, and they took it out, bless them. And I was particularly pleased because all the thirsty fuckers were at Blood Tithe, which meant that I could go to the Hants GT that was on the same weekend and go 5-0.
Woo, woo, woo. So we got a 5-0 Onwards AOS team and a 5-0, what are you, head? Head honcho.
Yeah.
Numero uno.
As wanky as that sounds. Yeah, it was a good week for us. I tell you what was really nice at the event. Shout out to Sam Boyce. He had his first 3-2. He's one of our patrons, and he was absolutely made up. And it was just like that was so. It was so satisfying. You know, you're like, oh, fuck, what we do is like making a difference, you know. And he was really super pleased, and he was really nice about, you know, his time that he's had with us, and he's seeing results. Yeah. And that's the, that was really, really satisfying. Yeah, it was a good weekend. Good weekend for the Onwards crew.
So you'd say that the coaches won and patrons got better. And therefore, if you would like to get better at this game, other than this is a podcast,
you always have
where... Where can they find this Onwards AOS, Darren?
I swear, listener, I swear Alex is not on commission. we've got a Patreon. You can follow it. You can get the link on my Twitter feed. Or let me just, the website is patreon.com/onwardsAOS. You're most welcome.
So there you go. No excuses now, dear listener. If you want to get better at the game, go and see these lovely gentlemen and talk to them about your stuff. But enough about plugging Darren's shit. Let's get our second co-host in. He is the sexy socked seductor himself. You can find him at Sock on My Sigma on the gram. He is at OJ180 on Twitter. It's the Owen Jackson. Hi, Owen.
Hello. You really do keep up with all these name changes I have on Instagram, don't you?
It's a full-time job keeping up with you, really. You should stop changing them on Instagram so much.
I know. It's like I can't ever decide what socks I want to wear in the morning, and I can't really decide on what my handle's going to be. Hello. Yes, I'm very well, Alex. Nice to be here, as usual.
And you just said you were at the team tournament. Tight. How was that? Was that all right?
Yeah, I had a little look at my calendar because I was trying to figure out when we last recorded, and I sort of thought, what have I been up to?
Yeah. Oh, don't start, because the Twitterati will be... They've been at me all bloody week. You know who you are. About the how we don't record Nathan. Enough.
Oh. Sorry.
And Tom.
You know who you are. But yeah.
So yeah, I mean, there's been quite a lot going on. Obviously, AOS Worlds is around the corner, and I'm playing for Wales, obviously.
The lists are in now, aren't they?
Lists are in, and there was lots of focus around that. And I think obviously we'll touch on this with our guest in a little bit. But it's I don't know if anyone else.
Well, we don't know the lists yet, though, do we? It's all secret.
Yes, this is true.
Keep it safe.
I think they're being released next week perhaps, but I mean, if you're minded to, you can always just look at what the players are taking to singles events, and generally that will be a little guide on what they're taking,
a little hint, a little snippet for you. There's no tips.
So just trawl through BCP like me, and you can research the hell out of all the teams. Or you could not be as obsessed as me. That might probably
Did they cut off the... Speaking of which, because this is what our podcast is about, is tomes. Was there a cutoff for what tomes you could use?
Yeah. So no new Soul Blight or OBR, but everything prior to that. So the last couple, so...
The Slaanesh Khorne,
Caradhron Overlords. Just... By the time the world's tournament starts, which is the first week of June, I think there'll be Seraphon, Ossiarch, Bone Reapers, and Soul Blight, which will be playing at singles, but not at the event. Which I really like it. Actually, I like that as a stance. Having a hard cutoff point gives everyone a fair playing field for knowledge of all the tomes and stuff. So I like that. But yeah, it has meant that I've been trying some things out, and I went to the Justice Series in Liverpool since we last talked. Did terribly, but had a nice time. Had some lovely chicken on the Saturday night, and got to play some people I hadn't played before.
Always well run those events, aren't they?
Oh, it's always a blooming such a shark tank up there in Liverpool. There's only about 40 players, but lots of names that you'd recognize. So I tried a list that was kind of in the running, and yeah, 50% me, 50% my headspace, and probably a little bit of the list as well. I tried out the Vexilar Spam Stormcast list with a Prime and four Dragons, and it felt really like hard mode. I think finally it's time. If anybody really wants to compete, whether it be singles or teams, Stormcast ain't it. You can go 4-1 with Stormcast, I think. I'm not sure what everyone else thinks, but I tried to make Stormcast work for a while, and then our mantra for this year with Wales was just that we're not going to mess around, and you want to take filth. So I bought and painted a Caradhron Overlords army in a week, and now I'm the bad guy.
Go to 40k.
It's pretty bonk. Yeah, I call it 40KO.
It's so obvious. It's so obvious.
How is playing one turn games?
I'm a little bit more of a conservative player, so I'm not the kind of...
Sorry, two turn games.
They're great. No, I went to Blood Tithe and took that, and I had a really good time with a sort of affiliated Wales team. There were quite a few teams there that were sort of like adjacent to the national teams, but with silly names. So I played with Alex, Bruce, and Mark Brooks, and then Luke Church has dropped in at the last second to help because we had a drop. I played KO there, and I mean, I'm okay at Warhammer, but I was completely unprepared and got paired into some good matchups and some okay ones. And yeah, I dropped a game. I lost to Mathmallow with Sylvaneth in the first game. And then I managed to pick up four wins. And as a team, we did well and came 10th. So I just wanted to shout those boys out. But yeah, it's all roads lead to Amsterdam now.
Amsterdam.
So, Amsterdam, yes.
Amsterdam.
One thing, I won't ramble on too much, but I wanted to shout out Richie and Mark Wilson because, so Richie McCallie and Mark, which are the TOs for those two events, because I'm currently on the last, you know, it's 2 days before the Welsh Open, which Dan Arnold and I are running in Cardiff at Firestorm. And gosh, so much work goes into these tournaments, and it's like, I don't know, the prizes get given out on the Sunday afternoon and everyone has a hug and you say goodbye and you get on the train, and then it's sort of, you're on to the next thing. And, you know, the amount of work that goes in, I think that, yeah, being a tournament organizer can be a bit of a thankless task. So I'm going to use this platform to thank them specifically and TOs in general, because, it's, yeah, it's a lot of work.
Nice.
And then, yeah, that just, yeah, my focus now is, looking forward to the Welsh Open. We've got just about 60 players, which I think, seeing as it's on the same weekend as Fest, is really good. And we've just literally put the battle plans and the lists out. So, Chris, who we're going to introduce, when we get off this call, mate, you can go and dive into all the lists after this, because they are all there for you. But, yeah, that's me. I would give myself a 7.8 out of 10 currently in life.
Oh, well, that is excellent. 7.8 is good enough. I'll round it up to an 8. So you're an 8 out of 10. Perfect.
Okay, fine.
There are lots of questions, Owen, about dating history to Twitter. You can cannot answer these questions on this podcast. It's up to you.
Okay. Can I hear them first?
No, go blind.
Go blind into the night. Okay, hit me. Come on then, whatever. People aren't really...
How's it going?
Good.
Any more than that, or are we just going to stop at good?
It's good. Yep.
Good. So there we go. Ev Twitter, there you go. There's the answers to the questions that you wanted answered. It's good. So if you want any more answers, either hit up Owen on Sock on My Sigma on Instagram, send him a DM, or at OJ180 on Twitter, and I'm sure he can discuss it more in depth with you. I am not going to answer any more of those messages, though, so you have to contact Owen for those.
Yeah.
Right. Shall we get our lovely guest in, who we've heard a few times already? He's been described by some as a complete nutcase. Some say that he also thinks I'm the best podcaster of all time, which is nice. So thanks. He is a Welsh descending wizard, part of Team Wales and GT winner. You can find him at Oldest Tea on Twitter. It's Chris Myhill, everybody. Hi, Chris.
Hello. Right, I just want to apologise now. Dan Heelan, I did not say that. You've always been my favourite.
Dan Heelan doesn't podcast anymore, so he can't say shit. So sorry, Dan. You're out. It's me now, baby.
I hope GT was recommended they listen to this show.
Oh, yeah.
I was literally just about to say Dan Who, so I hope that they don't.
Oh, nice. Dan Hoolan. Dan Hoolan. That would have worked.
Who, yeah.
No, Wayne was asking, is there a good show out? And I actually recommended this one.
Oh, thanks, mate. I mean, shout out to Dan and Wayne. I used to listen to Heel and Matt. I should have started with Yo, 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 Yo instead at the start, shouldn't I?
How old is that?
So if anyone doesn't know what the fuck we're talking about, Heel and Hammer was a podcast back in 50 years ago, back in fantasy days. So go and check it out. I'm sure you can find some of the episodes.
No, you can't. They're gone now.
Oh, well, you can't. So tough. But this podcast is better anyway. So, Chris, how's things been? All right?
Yes, I am alive.
That's good. Owen said a 7.8 out of 10. How about yourself?
Oh, man, I'm easily in 9.1.
Ooh. Oh, 9.1. Oh, that's good. Yeah. That's good. Right, well, it's thank you for coming on. It's very nice. And we're going to talk...
Just quickly, I'm 9.2, Chris, so I beat you.
Is that because you're older and got more years?
I would say everyone can type in to our Twitter feed what they are out of 10, and we'll see who has the highest. But I think this will get out of control, so
might have to. Someone will put the Infinity Emblem up, wouldn't they?
Well, yeah, exactly. Thanks for coming on. We're going to chat about changes. If you didn't get it from my amazing riddle at the start, we're going to talk about changes. And so Chris has kindly come on, and we're going to talk about what you do about looking at new tomes, and considering how many bloody tomes have come out in the last how many have we had in the last month and a half? Like
27.
Nearly 27. And so obviously we want to just chat about how the hell you even go about, or should you go about, digesting all of this stuff. So Chris has kindly come on. So thanks, Chris, for that. And thanks to everyone else for all your comments and messages. Shout out to the Party at the All Points and Rage of Sigmar guys, who, other than you should go listen to their hilarious podcasts, always good fun. So thanks to those guys, because it's kind of hilarious out on the Twits. And finally, just before we get into our main subject, we need to discuss the most important subject. That's clocks.
Yes. When do they go back, Alex?
I was going to give you a clock riddle, but I might do that next time. So we do actually need to discuss clocks again, in all seriousness, at some point, because Worlds is coming up again. Are you clocked up, Owen?
Hey, I've got Chris? A clock story for you, actually. This is very prescient.
Oh, go on then. Ooh. Clock me up.
I got clocked out at Blood Tithe.
Oh, yeah. Did you?
Yeah.
Who clocked you out?
How did you take it?
Awfully. I was a salty little bitch. I knocked my rag. So I did apologize to him at the time, and I also gave him the opportunity to do a combat, which then would have made me lose the game. So I don't want to get his name wrong. It was one of the Danes were over in force, and they were smashing it, and it was one of the Danish teams. So it was a guy called Malta.
They don't talk about.
Oh,
well,
now you're going to ask me to do a Danish accent.
No, please don't. Please don't. I've got friends over there. No.
Do it.
It became obvious after a little while that I had like literally 20 minutes to do three turns. And I clocked out. And
With KO?
Yes.
Fucking hell. What were you
Darren,
doing?
Darren, there's a lot of dice you got to roll in every
say,
shooting
it's all
phase.
Those blooming thunder it's a lot of dice.
It's not, that's not what the problem was. He was thinking of a pose. After he'd done his one turn victory, he was thinking of what pose to pull.
I'm doing it wrong, man. Obviously,
that would make more sense.
What pose did you go for?
I just went for the silverback, you know, both fists on the table, leaning over and then breathing directly into my opponent's face from about
good old traditional.
Oh, lovely. Centimeters away.
Lovely. I'd go for the salute, you know, the ship salute. The captain.
Okay.
Ship. Yeah, that's what I'd do.
If
I was a psychopath.
Yeah, and everyone out there who, I need to get back on the clocks, because it was a bit of a rude awakening. Like,
what did he say when he clocked you out? Did he say anything?
No, it was like this kind of, I was just getting more and more stressed, because I was like, I've got 30 seconds to do my shooting phase. This is never going to happen.
He must have been really confused. How the fuck has a KO player been?
Hey, I'm obviously a so-so pro when it comes to KO, right? I mean, I killed 8 flies by the time he got to his second turn.
He was playing Nurgle, was he?
Yeah.
That's a bit more understandable, to be fair.
No, okay. No, it's not, Alex. Don't give him any outs.
But yeah, clocks. We should have a big clock chat after Worlds. How about that? We'll book it in now, shall we?
I'm looking forward.
There you go, Laurie. We'll talk about clocks.
The clock is ticking.
Wow.
Hi.
Okay. So we'll talk about clocks. But anyway, we're not talking about clocks today. We're talking about tomes. So, Dr. Professor Christopher Myhill. Tomes.
I'm a doctor now. Yes.
And a professor. Tomes.
PhD.
As we've said, we've got so many tomes, 27 tomes in the last 3 weeks. And that's a lot of info to go through. And we've talked previously on this podcast about list writing and strategy and everything else. But with the amount of tomes coming out and the amount of information, new information, we just want to talk a bit about how you guys go about digesting it all, or whether you do digest it all. So I guess my first question is, are you someone with this volume of stuff that reads every tome that comes out? Do you go through all of them and try and go through all of them in one go? Or do you see one that kind of takes your fancy and you just go for that one to start with?
Well, I've got them all. I just haven't read them all.
You buy them all?
Yeah, you got to.
Oh, fair enough. Okay, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
It's okay, so you got them all, yeah.
Got them all. And then you set up, you know, you set them around in a circle, put the bottle in the middle and you spin one.
So it's a highly scientific based method.
I mean, yeah. This one. No, I've always got my armies, haven't I, that I like to go for.
Yeah.
So I'll always be looking for them when they come out like OBR.
So if it's like a favourite one, like OBR or Lizards?
OBR. Is
Lizards as well?
Yes. No. Yeah, Lizards is always going to be a favourite of mine. It's something I've been battling with since Age of Sigma started, whether to use them or not. And I started to. But Darren knows that I've been battling with that for years.
It's a well-known difficult task for everyone, I think, is to...
Well, I've got like... Well, back in the day before Age of Sigma, I had a lot of models. I still have those models. And I just couldn't bring myself to play it in Age of Sigma. Couldn't do the transition, but now I have.
Yeah.
And then Idenef is another one of mine. It's another one of the little more favourite ones.
Okay, so you'll see a favourite faction come out and then you'll read through that tome. And the other ones, will you get round to them or no? Will you ever get
So it'd be a thought process. So if I'm sat talking or I'm thinking and like I'll be having a conversation with Darren or with Rick or Sharky or whoever, and then I might get an idea about what something does and think of some sort of like synergies or something that might work into another army and then have to explore it. So I could be talking about like one of my games that I don't know, I played and this spell that was cast and I was like, oh, that was a bit nasty. That did that. Hang on, is that keyworded? Then I'll start looking at the tome again.
Yeah. And so that's very similar to something that I guess I could call him Coach Simon Weekly now, back on our episode 3? I'm going to say 3. I think it's 3. About our list writing episode where Simon talked that he gets a kind of idea. He kind of sees a war scroll or he sees a rule that he quite likes. So is that kind of similar for you? You kind of get an interaction there for that book and that gets you interested.
Yeah, basically. You have to forgive me. I'm losing my voice again, aren't I?
No, so you're apologies. All good.
That's where I'd go. I'd be like, something hits me in the head. You have a little epiphany, light bulb goes off. Then you get excited, flap your arms for a couple of minutes, then you have to find the book. You find the book and read it, then get disheartened because it was keyword.
And so keywords.
Go on.
I was going to say, like, taking it back slightly, like, how do you sort of consume the information? Like, do you watch much content? You know, there's lots of shows out there now where people like leak the book, or there's like previews. Or there's Wahapedia. Like, do you wait for to have the book in your hand? Like, what's your? I want to know what the Chris Myhill modus operandi is. Like, how do you tackle it?
I have to shut off from everyone wanting, especially if it's an army I've got an investment in, because I'm very sentimental. So I'll put everything into. I've got like my little army. So for me, the Prime's what brought me into Age of Sigma because I love the model. Mm-hmm. So I'm really super like invested into that model. As strange as that sounds, no, I don't sleep with it at night.
Yeah, you do.
Just on the side table.
And then, as we all know, my Eidolons for Idenef and then the Seraphic. You know, I form attachments with my models for some reason. Don't know why. It's not creepy. I do talk to them. Sometimes they talk back. And what's the question again? I sort of tuned out. I'm going to start thinking about my models.
Start thinking about the Prime and you got all excited. You forgot what you were saying.
Okay. It was just like, yeah, how do you consume a book or like what do you, yeah, like, you know, do you wait, as you say, you wait for the book, you like to form your own opinion or do you kind of, you take...
I don't like the public and not in a horrible way. Just everyone gets their ideas. You have like what you called it, like the think tank. I don't like that because I have to be different. I don't want to do what everyone else is doing because then it's not me. Then I'm playing someone else's game and I might as well put 100 robots in a room and play them. Okay. So I want to find me. So I will shut off as much as I can because it's difficult now, isn't it, with everything that's linked.
Yeah.
But I will shut off and hide away and just like put fingers in my ears and go la 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 la. So that when the book does happen, I can read it and then formulate my own thought process.
Yeah, that makes sense. And once you've done that process for one book and you found something and you thought, oh, that's quite cool, you then, I mean, for those that don't know, you guys have got a lovely like table set up and everything where you can just try this stuff out. Do you then go straight to trying it out, or will you then move on to the next book and do that for that one and keep going until you've finished, or will you do it one at a time, if that makes sense?
Well, because there's quite a lot of us, and like obviously, you know, Darren benefits from this, and you know, I do as well. It's like, what will fascinate Darren, I'll be on something else 9 times out of 10, and the same for like Rick and then the other people within inside the group. And then so it sort of works itself out when we want to play our games. So yeah. Like Slanesh dropped, didn't it, recently, and then you've got OBR that's dropped. So I love my OBR, so does Owen, and Rick loves Slanesh. So he's trying out his ideas with that one. So I get to learn the book and information from that, because he's obviously feeding it back to me, and then I'm playing my OBR or whatever.
Yeah.
So you get multiple things going off at the same time, so you can see what it all does, and then you can talk your ideas out with each other.
Yeah. So I know you said you don't like the group think, but it's almost like you have your individual think for your favorite faction, but then you use the other members of your group for the other stuff to try and pick up that information.
Yeah, I wait for them to tell me I'm wrong, and then I'll tell them they're wrong.
And then you show them they're wrong, Chris.
And then. Do you consider, like, you talked about like how you love certain models, and that means that's not being rude, but that's like quite a selfish thing, isn't it? You're like, oh, I like this and I want to make it work. This is cool. Do you do the same with like books and armies, or do you think, oh, this is going to be good now because there's lots of shooting in the meta and this has got really good anti-shooting tech? Like, do you consider the ecosystem, or do you just want to make cool things happen with the cool models that you like?
I mean, I run Prime through every army for every edition so far, whether it be good or bad. So you tell me, I've got to make it work. Anything can work. You've just got to find what works for you for playstyle and works when works with the army. You know, it might not be take all the like I am Thunderers or whatever, it might be go combat support. You know, I believe there is, you can play anything you want in a book. It's, you've got to think, and it's something you always ask, is like, what is your play style? How do you play? If you can identify that, it's that you've just cracked Warhammer when you've done that.
It's super important. Yeah, absolutely.
And so when books come out that, let's say, I don't know, let's take the Khorne and Slaanesh as an example. Are they, I'm assuming neither of those are sort of your kind of like factions, as it were. When they dropped, do you go and read those ones, or would you literally wait for the kind of tabletop experience with Rick, for example?
No, I'd probably read them to make sure Rick read it right.
Yeah, that's fair enough. No, that's really interesting. Darren,
yes,
how about yourself? I'm assuming, well, maybe I'm assuming wrong, but my assumption is because you play a lot of competitive, but also because of the coaching side, are you an avid consumer? Are you literally reading them all as they come out and digesting them all there and then?
I do my very best to read them, but I will avoid all. So I'm happy with leaks because then I get to read them, but I will avoid everyone else's opinions for a time. I won't watch any streams. I try not to pay too much attention to the thousands of people that send me messages about, oh, this is good, this is good, this is good. Okay, let me read it first.
because it's similar to Chris then, in that way you want to try and shut yourself off slightly.
Yeah, and this is the advice that I give people as well, because obviously people often ask me, how do you get better at list writing? You know, what is it you're doing? You're only going to get good at it if you practice it. You're only going to get good at assessing a new battle tome if you fucking assess it. And you can't do that if you've got everyone else's opinions in your head. And how many times have those initial opinions of the masses been absolute dog shit? Like Maggot Pin when they first dropped, or the content creators, or the Facebook groups, you know, the world was falling for Maggotkin players, and they became an absolute menace, didn't they? They were much, much better than people thought.
It's so, like KO, eh?
Exactly like KO. I would agree with that.
Just saying, a Nagash player would never drop himself so low.
Just give me a break.
How many times have them shots killed Nagash? I mean,
too many times.
How many times have you had to take him off the board because he was shot off the board?
Yes, I'll be and join him.
Yeah, well, I'm pulling the world's card, right? but I mean,
it's secret.
Talking about, you know, like books and why you play books and stuff. I mean, some people just go to the book that they know is good because, or that is inherently good. And books become solved, don't they? Do you think that's true?
Recovering quicker, yeah.
This is the point I was going to make, because remember Stu on our last episode, which was very interesting because he's the TTS demon. And as he said, his meta is the world. He's straight on TTS, and he thinks the books for him are broken within, what did he say, 24, 48 hours? So, yeah. You know, that is a different... I know Chris and Darren, you both said that you like to kind of shut yourself away from outside opinions, but Stu sounds like it does the opposite and gets kind of everyone involved in the process. So this is what I'm finding quite interesting. So just sticking with you, Darren, before we just go to Owen. So you try and digest all these books for yourself. Does that mean you're trying to do all of them? Because I think the rate of the book release has been astronomical.
No.
Okay.
So I can't. Now, some people have the capacity, the mental capacity. Some people are a bit younger than me. I'm in my 40s now. My brain is slower than it used to be. So if you asked me that question, say 10 years ago, I probably would be able to keep up, but I can't. So there's another strategy that I fall back on, and it comes from how I developed as a gamer, I think. And this is something that one of the reasons I think Chris is so good at this sort of approach, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, here, if you agree with this or not, but as a group of gamers, the Bruces, or before the Bruces, when we just used to go down to when we used to game at Chris's brother's.
Go on, say the name. I know it was rubbish, but just say it, Des.
Hey. Go on, get it. War Gamers Out for Fun.
Yeah, woof.
in our fantasy days, as a group of as a gaming group, we paid no heed to the internet because we didn't fucking understand it. So we were like this little gaming group, this isolated gaming group in Pompey that would venture out to Plymouth occasionally, and the people from Plymouth would come down to us. But we didn't take part in International Age of Sigmar. We only went to the big events at the Hants and the South Coast Grand Tournament, for example. And we used to go to Warhammer World and compete there. But we didn't really take part in the community at large, let's say. And we didn't bother with stuff online. And it meant that we weren't, all of our opinions were self-developed. Now, if you game at the Bruces, none of them, which it can be quite frustrating, but none of them are fussed about taking meta lists. None of them are fussed about taking optimized lists. They all want to take what looks good, which is fine, but it means that you have, I don't game so much anymore, but back in the day, certainly, you would have, you know, week in, week out, a different game, a different situation, a unique situation. One of the games that we used to play would be Triumph and Treachery. So that would be 3-on-3 or 4-on-4. And it meant that you were practicing problem solving on the spot. So not problem solving that you sat down and you've had a week and you know what tournament's coming up and what missions are going to be and you've seen all the lists. You were practicing problem solving on the spot. Because of this gaming trajectory, I think that's one of the reasons why the Bruces are quite a solid bunch, because we don't have to absorb all the information, have all the problems solved for us before we go to an event. We're very good at asking, what does your army do? Does this mean that you can do that? Okay. And then we'll come up with a problem on the spot.
Yeah. So it's situational.
Yeah. So we're very good. So, and that's one way. If when you get a lot of change nowadays, I've because I do take a bigger interest in the online world because I'm older, but also I'm I'm able to. It's taken me a little while. I'm such a boomer. And also, this is like part of my job to know shit, you know, from a coaching perspective. So I do pay a lot more attention, but I don't rely on it. I can't emphasize this enough. Practice problem solving on the spot. So don't weep in, weep out, play metagames. You know, when you're thinking, right, I'm going to do a practice game, week in, week out, playing the same Slaves of Darkness list or the same Khorne list for like months on end is brilliant. But when you get to the event and you come up against a problem that you haven't practiced and you go to shit because you haven't practiced problem solving on the spot. So just, I always say to my patrons, pay about 75% of your games with the list and the faction that you're comfortable with, and then 25% just do something fucking different. Like, do play any old game, use any old shit, use that Glutos that you've got a commission painter to do that's beautiful that you've never taken to a competitive event because you're a coward. Get it on the fucking table, right, and practice playing these bizarre games, and you'll be able to then go to an event and some of the problems, you know, you'll have done some research. So, for example, I have, before I went to the Hans G2, I did know a bit about Khorne, and I did know a bit about Soulblight Gravelords, let's say. But I didn't concentrate. I didn't try and go through them completely because it would just be too much shit in my head. And I was confident that I could just ask my opponent, what does your shit do? And then I'm going to be able to use my experience and my confidence that I can be okay in that situation. And I'm not going to panic. A lot of people panic when they're at the table, that they get all this new information and they don't know what to do. And that's because they've not put themselves in that situation. Put yourself in that situation week in, week out, and you'll be so much better at Warhammer than you're
just hanging on that point you said about not doing all the information. What sort of information do you take when you do that kind of quick skim read?
So I want to know which, I will try and assess which factions I'm going to be really going to have difficulty with so that I can try to avoid them throughout the event. If I know what scenarios are in play, I will try to hit particular people in a particular scenario if I'm able to. But I really want to know which one, and then I'll have a game plan for the top three armies that I think are going to be a problem with. And if I do know the missions, specifically a game plan for the missions for 4 and 5, they're the ones that I really concentrate on. So I don't try and solve every round. I don't try and solve every faction, but you know, the very top. And sometimes, you know, the people that are going to the event and what factions they're using as well. So it's always a good idea to have like a plan A, but it's not really thought out. It's not like I'm scribbling away at midnight, you know, with a candle.
Yeah.
You know, you can be too prepared and you can have too much shit in your head. You imagine you trying to find out all this information and then go into the event and like only playing playing like I did at the Hans GD, two KO games, a Gargan and a Khorne game. You know, and I'd researched like 23 factions or how many there are now. It's a lot of useless information. So I would just say concentrate on the big bads, have a plan for those, but really focus on practicing problem solving, and you'll do better at events.
If there's a benefit in it, if you put yourself, so when you're practicing at home, this is, and you know I'll do this, I'll put bad things into something that shouldn't happen combats on paper. And it's not advised that you do that because 9 times out of 10, it's a reason why it's bad on paper, but you start to learn to what can actually hurt your army. So when you've never fought something, when you've never, or you don't know what that particular faction does or what that build does, you know what hurts your army. So you can ask specific questions for your army to know from them. So you could be like, are you high magic? Yes. How many spells can you cast? Yeah. Do you cut? Right. Okay. So I now got a magic threat. I need to isolate that magic threat because I'm weak to that.
Yeah.
And you simplify the problem quickly by knowing how your army's hurt.
Yeah. So you're practicing, and I've had the benefit, kindly enough, went down to play with Chris and his brothers. For those of you who don't know, Rick is Chris's brother. And you guys
practice. It's not been proven yet.
and you guys, as you said, you practice situations, don't you? You put stuff in. It's a situation practice rather than a every rule in the battle tone practice.
Yeah. So like, and that also lead. Yeah. So that helped me with tomes as well. So like, there'd be something in a tome that I'd want to fixate on, whether it be an artifact or a unit type or what it can do. That attracts me.
I think as well, Chris, when you practice like that, you get an idea of what's possible, so that when you're in like an impossible situation, you can find that 1% play because you've actually fucking tried to do it 100 times.
Well, I was going to say this about the triumph and treachery thing, because I thought that was really interesting, because I'd never seen that before until I came down to your place.
And so good.
Triumph and treachery is... I mean, I'm not a coach on this podcast, but I will say as a tip, if you haven't tried Triumph and Treachery, try it, because as Darren, you just said, you get put in some situations that will never happen in a 1v1, because Triumph and Treachery is what, 3-4 of you? Mm-hmm. But those situations, when they happen, it's mental. You have to work your way out of 4 different people doing something, and you can really come up with some really interesting, plays, techniques to get around it, which can help you in the 1v1.
It just means that when you're in that situation in the 1v1, you're calm, because you've been on it, you've been in that situation loads of times before. But I can honestly say that so many times people have just gone to shit against me because I'm using something that they've not seen before. And that's another thing that me and Chris tend to do, is try and use things that are a little off meta, let's say. Certainly more so for Chris, me less so in recent years, because I'm getting worse at the game. But if you put people on the spot and they're not used to solving problems on the spot, then they can go to shit. So just practice being uncomfortable, so that when you are uncomfortable at a tournament and it happens, you don't go to shit.
Yeah,
also, it gives you the confidence that you... Because sometimes you actually work your way out of an impossible situation and you hit that 1%. So it gives you confidence that it can be done. Does that make sense? Like, yep, it's all about keeping yourself calm, confident, even when you're in difficult situations. And you're only going to do that if you practice being in difficult situations.
Yeah. That's similar to what, sorry to keep referencing our previous episodes, but our psychology episode with Jack, where he said he hasn't lost until he's lost. He's constantly looking for those yes. outs of situations. So, Owen, interesting chat already so far. How about yourself, Tomes? Are you, again, you're a tournament organizer, you're a Team Wales member, team tournaments. Are you doing something similar to Chris and Darren, or are you trying to kind of consume the information by reading the Tomes or internet like Stu?
I will say that for anybody else out there who's feeling a little bit overwhelmed, I'm in exactly the same spot, you know, regardless of how deep down the blooming, you know, the whatever it's called, the tunnel we've fallen towards, the looking glass or whatever, you know, regardless of how in you are, I still feel that the pace that they put all these tomes at is a little bit overwhelming. So it's kind of a really good timing for this chat, because it can be a little bit like, I mean, I always say knowledge is power. So you kind of do need to know, not necessarily everything that an army does when you face it, but you need to know like what its path to victory is. And so I think I do consume a lot of content, I must say. So like when the tomes come out, or when there's, you know, when there's sort of leaks or whatever, or chat, then I do tend to try and soak that up. But then, I mean, let's take KO for example. Like, obviously, everyone says Caradhran Overlords are crazy strong, but you still need to put it on the table and put it in the right place and know the synergies and things like that. So, for example, I basically listened to, I think, 3 different content creators' sort of KO review, and then I caught up with... I don't know if you're aware, there's actually a, like, just dedicated Caradhran Overlords YouTube channel and podcast.
Aethercast?
Aethercast, yeah. So, I think it's Kron and I think it's Max from the German team, and I don't know the host's name, but it was really, really interesting.
It's Brent, isn't it? Brent Evans?
Perhaps.
I'll take your word for it. But yeah, whatever, whoever they are, they were doing a brilliant job. And like, so yeah, I went and listened to like their review, and then they did a whole thing about lists. And I do listen to a lot of content.
And did you find that helpful? Was that a helpful exercise?
Yeah, super helpful.
Have you tried the other way though, Owen? Have you tried shutting yourself off, taking an army, learning what can hurt it, what can't hurt it, and then see? Because do you ever not wonder that sometimes in your games you get lost because you're overthinking, because you've got too much and you're just going through it, and you're going through every scenario. So then what ends up happening, instead of you having some confidence, puffing your chest out, throwing that energy out into your dice, you end up second guessing yourself.
I think that's definitely part of it. I think there's an element of psychology around, you always think, especially the more that you know about the game, you often sort of realize
how little you know.
Yeah, well, also I think you catastrophize and you think that your opponent's going to play perfectly. So like,
oh yeah,
you know, you'll think to yourself, oh well, that you know, that can buff, that character can buff that. So if I move that way, he might redeploy that little character around the back, and then that means that he can get this buff on there, and then this will happen. And you end up just kind of, yeah, you do get in your own head a little bit when you perhaps go too deep on all the information, and then you carry that around with you. That being said, I don't know. I think when the books come out, I like to have initial like feel for it. Like, oh, the overall feel is that it's been toned down a touch, but there's this one crazy build, or the overall feel is that it's got stronger because it needed a lift. But then I'll just play games, and I tend to just learn from playing games, really. I'm not, you know, there are some amazing people I could name check, like, who just sort of within a couple of days, they're like, I've written all these lists, and, you know, there are lots of early adopters, and I think they love just operating right on the bleeding edge, whereas I like to see a book settle a little bit and then find my own fun within it. I think I'm a bit like you, Chris. I like to be a bit of a snowflake and kind of have my own flavour even within a book, even if people think it's solved.
Chris loves being called a snowflake then.
No, well, I'll take it because it's Owen. But so, like, one of our gaming friends, I never actually understood what this word meant. And you, obviously you hear it, don't you? Like, Little Miss Muffet sat on the tuffet, eating a cat's weight, yeah, and quite contrary.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what contrary meant. And then he called me it, and I didn't know what, just had to look it up. Right, mm-hmm. I'm not ashamed of that. And it's the most apt description of me ever. Because if someone was to tell me this army list is great, I'd be like, no, it's not, it's crap. And I'd go find my own one.
Yeah, I don't think you're on your own there, though, mate. I think there is a psychological profile within, you know, the gaming community for people who, you know, they just want to push shit uphill, for want of a better word or term. And that's cool because it's, you know, you see it as a challenge. Like, I think, you know, taking a slightly underpowered book. And I don't know, Darren, like, I remember when I first met you, Darren, which was like 2019 Blood Tithe. Mm-hmm. And you were playing some, that was the year that you won with Dan Ford and
Mitchell.
Yes, exactly.
Will,
and I think Will might have been there, Will Barton perhaps.
Yeah.
Was he playing with? Yeah. And like, you were playing some bonkers chaos list that was kind of bringing in all these random little bits. And I think that there's a lot of players that get a lot of, they get a lot of value and a lot of like, personal sort of like fulfillment from taking those older books, perhaps, where there are some little, you know, the corners of the game that I like to call it. You know, you find those little combos and synergies and little pieces that people have forgotten about, and then they resurrect them into like a new meta. So I think I do really like it when, you know, you can keep, when a book is well written and you can go back and pick little things out. But I mean, for me, I wouldn't say I'm ever like a meta. I don't like building and painting this KO army has been a little bit weird for me because it is the most sort of like meta chasery thing I've ever done. Normally I'm a bit like what Chris has said. I love my OBR. I like my Sylvaneth. I've grown to love Stormcast. I've always liked Khorne. So I have my books that I really like. And then normally, like, I'm looking at my OBR book now, I'll probably go for something that's 60% what people think is good, and then I'll just throw in some other random stuff around the edges to like have my own little bit of flavor. Because if a book's good, then you're going to pick up three wins easy. And then, you know, the challenge then is to take a little bit of something a little bit different and play around in that space.
Anything you can do to increase your satisfaction at the table, then absolutely do it. If you need to change an artifact so that you can say that it's my list, do it. Say it's your list. That's fine. Like you need to believe in what's in front of you. Mm. You need to have an emotional attachment, or you don't need to do anything. But my understanding of gaming would suggest that you need to, you know, your self belief. And if you need to change an artifact or introduce like an ally from somewhere else so that you can put the stamp on it, that increases your satisfaction. Ultimately, that's going to increase your chances at the table. As long as there is some reason behind it, you do have some sort of plan for it. Absolutely.
Oh, I don't know if I ever have plans.
Well, that might be a good segue to talk to you, Chris, about how you assess tomes, because that was going to be my next part. We mentioned going through, you have your favourites, and let's take OBR, because that's a good example. So we get all these new tomes, we get a new one, you see the one that you want to have a look at. How do you go about assessing that new tome?
So you want to know the first thing I do when I get it?
Yes, please.
I look at the points.
Really? That's the first thing you look at, points?
First thing I go to it, because it'll indicate the biggest change in the book. So if you know the OBR points from, like, obviously you know that more eat, and then you go to it. So for instance, Stalkers and Immortus Guard, they jumped up in points too after being dropped twice previously.
Yeah.
Lowered. So you're like, okay, that's something I've got to look at in the book, because it's instantly jumped up. Why have they jumped up? So it starts asking the questions of where you need to focus.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And then if you look at the war scroll, and then you go, oh, I can't see it in the war scroll, why is it more points? Then there's obviously a link either with a command ability or with a battle trait or a magic item or something, or a command ability. So, you know, something there will dictate why they're better. So with the points, it can lead you to where the book's gems are.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, that's really interesting. So you're essentially looking for changes from the get-go rather than... whether something that you really liked before stayed the same. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
So and then, if the Mortec Guard were the same points, you wouldn't necessarily look at them straight away. You'd go straight to the changes.
Yeah, I'd go to what's been either increased or decreased in points, depending.
Okay. And then do you sort of snowball from there? So we just mentioned the Mortis Guard points. Or do you then start looking into the book as a whole, but with specifically towards those units? Or does it just then kind of snowball outwards to everything?
It snowballs out, because you've got to think. So if you look at a tome and you literally take it from a brainstorm, so you need to take one idea. So you look at the points, you find that one idea for this particular instance is a Mortis Guard. That's there. So why are Mortis Guard working? Then you start to spiral off. You start to have like, oh, it's because this command ability allows them to. So Mortis Patronin, they can charge. If they're charged in the enemy's face before they're out of free, they can suddenly get a charge in. Hang on a minute. Then they've got this ability on their war scroll that then allows them to fight again, but they get destroyed last. So could this then work and then give them an extra move into the board? You then start to spiral out to how this grows and how this works. And then you'll start to lead yourself into like other little sub brainstorms to then start to formulate everything you go on. You just need to find a center point, because if you try and go, oh, let's look at that war scroll, you get lost. You start to, everything becomes a blur. It's like staring at a page for too long. So you need to have a focus to then build around.
Yeah, I suffer from that personally.
Does that make sense? You need to have a point, whether it's good or bad, it doesn't matter, but you need to have a point where it will lead you somewhere. And then depending on where you go to, it will actually reflect, I find, for me, my play style, which is generally quite aggressive and tanky.
Okay. So if you see a change in a unit, but let's say it doesn't turn out to be aggressive and tanky, will you then go back to the points page and keep going?
Generally speaking, from that, I will find it, because I don't know, maybe I just have a different way of looking at it. Like, I've got a book in front of me now, actually, because I was waiting for you to ask me some rule questions. So,
yeah.
I have as well, by the way, just so you know.
There we go. We're now an OBR podcast.
Oh, I'm going to get it up on Wikipedia. Is it out yet? Oh, it's not, is it?
See, Darren, you're one of those people.
I've let us down.
Yeah.
I don't have it either, Darren.
So I'm one of those people. What, one of those poor people? yes, I am.
No, it's not one of those poor people. That's not what I said. You're just Wikipedia people.
For the first time ever, I've bought the limited edition battle tome.
Oh, you're one of them people.
We've literally got a working sort of like class structure within the podcast and OBR. We've got the wanker with the limited edition battle tome. We've got
all the kit. No idea that one. Yeah,
we've got your regular dude in Chris.
All the kit and play KR, you mean?
And then you've got Darren, who's just ripping off the internet.
Yeah, I mean he's got to keep up. Bless him.
Question then, Chris, does your attitude and the way that you like tackle a book, does that change based on your emotional attachment to it or your knowledge of the book? So for example, like when the new Stormcast book comes out, I bet you didn't look at the points first, did you?
He looked at the Primes points first.
He probably looked or the Primes War Scroll.
It goes Prime, Formulators, Star Drake.
I mean, you're talking my language, baby.
Yeah.
Hashtag Reign of Stars, bestest ever.
And then, but there is an emotion. For me, I am emotional with Warhammer. I don't know why. I just am. Mm-hmm. So, I got no love for Gitz.
Yep.
None at all. Mm-hmm. From all my years of ever playing Warhammer, they've just been the army that is the most annoying. It's your longest games. It's always got the complex crap you don't want to deal with. Mm-hmm. And it's just so, I'd never look at their book.
No.
Okay.
Someone can tell me about their book and I might take in the information.
So would you say, like, take this OBR book, you've had a look at the points. Mm-hmm. Do you like to refer to what was to see what's changed, or do you take it as like a brand new thing, or like do you, because armies tend to be quite flavorful, don't they? I'm sure we'd all agree, like you kind of know what you're getting into. So would you think to yourself, oh well, it's going to be tanky and very militaristic and probably look like a traditional army, you know, so then you start to fill it out? Or do you go, because like sometimes one artifact can define a book, can't it, or a build?
I gotcha.
So like, where would you like, how do you start to break down this OBR book then beyond points?
Well, it's like I did. So like for me, so that's what I mean. So I went Immortus Guard.
Mm-hmm.
That was the points change. So I went, why? So I looked at their war scroll, seen that they're pretty much the same, lost the shields. It only happens once a game now where they can strike again. It's not something where they can do it with the shields each combat phase. So it was like, okay. Then I'm like, what sub-factions do they go in? Because obviously they were always Mortis Patronus. So I'm still, I suppose, looking back at the old rule book. And if I'm saying their sub-faction wrong, I'm sorry, but yeah. And then
the internet will correct you. They love.
They can
you.
Correct me, and I yeah, will not. Send, I never
send
will.
Send Twitter messages through to Alders T.
Yeah.
I think you'll find.
And then, like, I then go to obviously see the sub factions, see what that's changed about them to then make it. And then if I still can't, then you've got to go to, yeah. So I just jump to all the command abilities. And then that's where I start to then push the army and build the army from there.
Hmm.
If I get to that point and there's nothing left in there, hopefully I've found something else along the way. If I haven't, then I put the book down, go have a vodka, and then I come back and then try it with drunken eyes. Because sometimes that helps. Some of my best ideas have been while I've been upside down drinking.
Mine's swimming. I find some of my best ideas for lists are when I'm swimming and I let my mind drift, pun intended.
That's not how you used to be.
You haven't been swimming for a while then, eh, Darren?
Ah, livid.
Sorry, I couldn't help myself.
And aligned to that, Chris, do you ever find you miss anything?
Yeah.
So, like, as in, so, and I, what I mean by that is, you've latched on to, let's take the Immortus Guard, let's take OBR, let's stick with the OBR. And mm-hmm. you've hit the Immortus Guard, you've gone, right, points have changed. Why? it's XYZ, so it's the allegiance ability or it's the command abilities or whatever.
Yep.
But let's say in the book, I mean, I don't know the book well enough, but the foot guy, Jesus Christ, my brain's not working.
Stalker. Let's see if Owen can remember.
The normal foot infantry.
The Mortec Guard.
Yeah, the Mortec Guard, that's the one. So Mortec Guard, let's say the points are similar or haven't changed, and therefore your eyes aren't drawn to those, but the allegiance abilities or whatever has made them 10 times better and you might want to use them. But would you end up missing that because you're looking for the changes? And same with like other books. Have you found that you miss units and then have to go back and find them again, as it were?
I've missed things in books, yeah, but that's because I'm like a bit stubborn sometimes. But no, like generally as a whole, the fact that I work backwards, don't I? So I go to the end of the book to get the ending, to then go to the beginning to find out what happened.
Mm-hmm.
In that journey, you should see where the other stuff sort of fits in. So obviously you're reading at subfactions to see why sort of Mortgus, and in that you then clock. So you shouldn't miss it, because then you obviously know that Mortec Guard, so you can just jump onto them, because they're battle line, for instance, so they're going to have to be, and then that can lead you down another path. Well, it's just because where I don't have other influences on me with how I should look at a book, or where a lot of people go on and you get the drip and tap syndrome, where you start thinking to yourself, I can only look at it this way, it must be this, it's all that's possible. I'm not restricted when I look at a book. It's always fresh eyes. It's always like, oh, but old Joe Bloggs down the road said this is the only build that could work, so I can't look at any. You don't turn yourself off to the rest of the book. So everything just leads everywhere. You start reading and just start going for it when you start going through, however angle you take it.
And will you
I have a cautionary tale along those lines, Alex, if I may.
Please.
So when the KO book dropped, I'm in the England chat, and the initial reaction from everyone was, "Oh, these aren't as good as they were before, and we won't be taking them to Worlds." And then I got a hold of the tome, and I thought that they were very good, not as good as they are. I'll say that. But I thought that I really liked Frigates and I really liked Brock. But what I missed is Thunderers. And it's because I had this, I didn't even, I read the scroll, but always do the fucking math. Because the Thunderer War Scroll, everything looks nice and reasonable, doesn't it? When you take the individual weapons profile, oh, the cannon, ether cannon, okay, that's reasonable. It's just one cannon, a couple of shots. Oh, the deck, oh, yeah, that's a nice fun feature. That's perfectly reasonable. That's perfectly reasonable. Oh, the 5+ does a mortal wound from the fucking kitchen sink fucking thing at the end of combat. Yeah, that's nice and reasonable. Fumigators, they're probably a little bit unreasonable, but that's fine. What I failed to appreciate is that when you actually run the math, they're twice as good as they used to be. But I had in my head Thunderers are a bit pap before, so I'm not going to bother really investigating them. So I didn't run the math. And then as people started to explore the KO tome, Tom Maudsley obviously did particularly well at an event, they were like, fucking hell, these are really good. And
the fumigators are a little unreasonable should have been the title of this podcast.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, they are the most. Why is a fucking shooting unit able to do 6 mortal wounds in the combat?
It isn't.
I want to know why it can't do 12.
You're only supposed to roll for one fumigator, not all three in a unit of 15.
Oh, well, some people were. Well, the vast majority of KO players are playing with all three.
But is that really?
Really?
Rule arguments aside, and I'm not arguing with you, Owen.
Oh, yeah, no. It's just I've always played it that way, and that's how it's ruled at Worlds, so that I've kind of gone off that.
Sure.
So the cautionary tale here is just because you had some bias before on a previous tome, see a new tome as completely new. And also, think of it, this tome is now in the here and now. So what was like the old Seraphone tome, you know, when it first came out, it was really fucking good, but the meta was completely different to how it is now, let's say. So when you're judging the new Seraphon tome, think of it in the context of now rather than your wistful memories of before when salamanders were 80 points. And some content creators said that that was absolutely fine. Still makes me chortle. So, yeah, just try, make sure you look at everything and don't have any bias. Otherwise, you can miss absolute givens. And now when I think about it, I was fucking stupid. When I was reading that KO tome for the first time, Thunderers didn't sing to me. But why didn't they sing to me? They absolutely should. Because if I'd have run the fucking math, I would have seen that they're twice as the output has doubled. And that's fucking phenomenal for 135 points. That's mad. But I was too focused. I was too focused on the fact that I really liked what Brock did, and I really liked what the bubble, what Frigates did. You know. So
I guess that's related to my question that I gave to Chris. Is that?
That's why I said it.
Yeah. But that's key to the question because of the amount of books that have come out. Would you say it's inevitable that people will miss things?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, yeah.
People aren't perfect.
The trouble is you've got to, for me, there's people out there that are generally just trying to grab every power army as soon as it comes out, as soon as it drops, and run and go with it. And that's fine. If that's how they want to play, I welcome them sort of games because I always find them probably my best games I ever have. And then you've got people that want to just go along and they want to stick with that army, whether because they're like me and I've got an emotional attachment to it, or they just, that's all they've got and they want to play it or whatever, and they'll play their heart out and do that, and they'll know everything about their book. And then when you sort of like compare the two sort of level of players, the one that's sort of like reread their book, they're a lot more fluent in their games. There's no, I've just done this. Oh, do you mind if I take that back? Oh, no, I forgot to do that this phase. Do you know that they're like, oh, we're all done, down to you. And it makes a difference for a gameplay as well. Mm-hmm. For when
you find the players that have kind of honed down on one out of the many that have come out a kind of better gaming experience.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. Interesting.
Because they know their book. They know, and it's generally quicker games as well. There's none of that, oh, what have I got to do now? What have I got to do now? It's, they know.
Hmm. I think going back to thinking about like digging through these tomes, and you're right, Darren, you know, that Thunder of War scroll is sort of like the sum of its parts. And also you can bring, like you said, your previous bias. Like everyone used to just run rifles before and you're like, oh, rifles, wound on fours.
Yes.
There's not a great deal of plus one to wound except for one thing, like one article, which is like, and then maybe you go low points and get your triumph. But, you know, you can miss that. But similarly, every book doesn't read differently. I think, you know, talking about OBR, it makes me think a little bit like Nighthaunt. Like, yeah, the scrolls are solid, but the power of the book is in the allegiance abilities.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, Stormcast, you're basically just playing War Scroll Hammer. Like, there's a reason why every fucking Stormcast general in the entirety of the Mortal Realms is a master of magic with the Arcane Tome. It's because unless you play, like, three big dragons or do something a bit meme-y, then generally there aren't any good traits and artifacts. There's a couple of bits and bobs, but, you know, they're not defining. Like, the book's strength is in the strength of the scrolls, whereas, like, again, Nighthaunt with, like, army-wide retreat and charge and all those debuff stacks and the suite of command abilities that are available to OBR, like, those are the things that make those armies strong. Whereas, I don't know, for example, you can think about, I don't know, would you say, let's say, like, Ogre Maw Tribes, is that a mixture of the quality of the allegiance abilities plus a couple of key war scrolls? Like, I don't know. My point is just that it's hard to sometimes know exactly where the strength lies within a book. So you can't approach each book with the same sort of method.
Is that, yeah.
Would you agree? I don't know if you agree on that.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Go on, Chris.
No. Well, see, this is the thing. So, if the strength lies in the book, then it means that a list is going to beat me and not a player. So for me, the strength lies in the player. So the player has to find what works for them.
Yeah.
Because every like you hear the comment, Daniel, oh, the book's overpowered or the book's this or whatever. Yes, I mean, some books, it'd be easier for some people to do well with certain books at certain points. But it's always the player that you've got to find what is you in that book. If you don't find what's you in the tome, how you like to play, what you like, if whether it's casting magic, whether it's standing back and shooting. And this, again, this is something I learned from the group of gamers that I was able to be around. So Darren, you're going to hate me for saying this, mate, but you was generally the shooty, stand back, keep you going, wood elves type jobs. You know, you was your shooty army. Pete was like run at you with heavy armored troops and just, you know, Bretonian days and go for it. I don't know how to describe Rick, but it was another type of plan. And again, I had my own. So we found, whether we realized it or not, we managed to find our sort of play styles. And when you look at our builds that we use for Age of Sigmar, you'll find that we're still playing similar sort of things. We might go off meta or off beat every now and again, but generally it's a similar concept because we found how we like to game.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll always see we could all pick up the same book and we'd write four different lists.
I think you've got to be aware of when you change as well. So, and this is probably more relevant to people that are getting on like me. But what I really liked at the weekend at the Hants GT was I had 26 models and the most dice I was ever rolling was 12, right? So it meant I could sit down, had a lovely time. I've only got 26 decisions in the movement phase. I don't have fucking 200. I don't have to pick up 180 dice and then pick out 64 pluses, you know, and then roll them again. So mechanically, for me, I realize now that I just, as much as I absolutely love creating massive combos that create loads of dice and I love all that chaos, I just can't fucking do it anymore. I'm too old. I'm not mechanically good enough to do it. So if I want to continue playing well, I have to understand my limitations as well as my play style. So for me, moving forwards, I'm going to be using less and less models within my gaming, just so that I can mechanically function at the table. But it will allow me to, one of my favorite bits about my playstyle is that I really like watching my opponent, you know, and I used to be able to do that before, but I can't anymore because I'm getting on in my years. Or you might just be someone that can't mechanically play Warhammer with lots and lots of dice. So when you see all these armies being really successful, you know, say if 200 zombies becomes a thing and then you try 200 zombies and you know, you don't get on with it, don't think that it could be because you can't physically do it. You know, you have to understand your limitations as well as your play style. Does that make sense?
That resonated with me. But that's what I've sort of learned with speaking with you guys on these podcasts. Because for me, I think I'm very similar, Darren, in the fact that, yes, I like seeing all these combos, but I just can't get with it at all on the tabletop. I find it difficult to set it all up, and I don't find that process that enjoyable. And I find the actual kind of, well, I've always said my favorite phase is movement phase, so I could just play movement phases forever. And yeah. probably enjoy the game just as much. And so actually with my simple brain, I need to go more towards those sorts of books. So I find that very interesting that you say that, because that's something that I've certainly recognized.
What I've heard, Alex, it's moving the models into the dead pile that you've been doing a lot of recently.
Yeah, but that's why you play your armies where they res back again on a 4+. Whoa!
No. Although that was a great rule change. The 10 wounds.
Yes, yeah,
I'd like them to have just chinned it off completely.
Yeah, I personally
agreed.
Would have liked them to
I've never liked summoning or anything like that. I've felt it was bad. But at least you know, it's... It is a good move. But one thing I have realised in this conversation with Owen talking is how quickly things are changing. So, like, you think, right, you're talking about Stormcast at the moment, and they're still... When their book last came out, that was 2 GHBs ago.
Yeah.
Man, that's mad, isn't it? And they're still there, though. That's pretty good, isn't it? They were a good investment, but then they are GW's golden boys, aren't they?
But then you look at war clans, for example, and they are like dropping like a stone. I mean,
smashing it, aren't they? Aren't they like number two in TTS sports win rates?
Iron Jaws?
No. Oh, sorry. I thought you said more tribes.
War Clans. Sorry, my bad. Just another book that came out at the same time.
Yeah.
It does feel like quite an old tome now. But I think that more goes to like battle tactics and grand strategies. Like that, there seems to be quite a change in the 2 years. You say it was two years since that Stormcast book came out.
No, you didn't know, because it's every 6 months a new GHB comes out. So at best, it's 18 months.
That sort of leads to my next question, which is for those people, I guess, like Chris, who have an emotional attachment, let's say for the Stormcast example, when the new stuff comes out, would you advise people to kind of look at the tomes from the Stormcast eyes, as it were? And what I mean by that is you've got no intention of playing some of these books, but is it worth looking at them to see what you would do with your own favorite faction, or do you think it's just too much info and actually it's back to that kind of situational play? I think Chris,
it depends on your gaming level, doesn't it, and what you want out of the game. For me, it's too much information. I mean, I'd rather I'll turn up to a table and I'll ask the questions I need and then I'll learn it that way. So to have a tome that I'll probably either can't read or haven't been able to get round to, I wouldn't want just pick it up just to read it so I can then start build. Because again, you start influencing how you play and how you read your actual tome you want to play, or your faction you want to play, because you start then, whether you realise it or don't, you start building towards what you're thinking is really, and you just, like Darren said, you just end up prepping it and you could go to an event and not play against them.
Yeah.
So
What do you think, Darren? Same?
I think
It is difficult because
I had a thought and it's gone, and now all I can do is thinking about me falling over pudding. It's just making me
giggle. And rabid,
you know what you should do? You should put a paddling pool in Darren's front room so that he can think of what it is and swim and have an epiphany. Yeah.
Sorry, just frame the question again, Alex, because I think it's gone out.
It's just, I'm just trying to get at that, because lots of people do, I think it's fair to say, although I'm making an assumption now, but I think it's fair to say most people have the sort of favourite factions that they use for the most part. I think there's very few people that, jump over and over and over again every few weeks. There are a few people like that, but I would hazard a guess that most people kind of stick with one thing for a time. And so you've stuck with your one thing that's now sort of out of fashion, out of flavour. I don't know. Let's say Iron Jaws or Stormcast or whatever. Pick whatever faction was out a while back. How useful do you find it to assess all these new tomes with your faction's eyes, as it were? Or is, as Chris is intimating, that's just too much information for him, and actually he finds it much more important that he's learning from situations, and therefore, in essence, it doesn't matter too much what all the new info is, because the situations will still be the same. And I was just wondering whether you find that the same, or actually you yourself quite like to know a lot of the new info.
I write a lot of lists and I imagine a lot of situations, and you can think to yourself, like, say, take the Stormcast tome, for example. You can present yourself a challenge. You can be like, so at the moment, Galatian Champions are like the game is centered around those. And that's why we saw like the advent of Vexillas. Whereas before, Vexillas were hardly ever taken. And if they were taken, it was to transport Fumulators about in Living Cities list, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I thought you were about to say transport food.
Pudding. So you can think to yourself, okay, well, what happens if wizards become the next focus of the GHB? Okay, I'm going to write a Stormcast list that's particularly good with wizards and against wizards. What if mounted troops are the next GHB? I'm going to write a Stormcast list that's good into mounted troops and uses mounted troops, etc. So you can give yourself little puzzles to solve and then just try and make the best list you possibly can. And I do that for fun because I'm fucking blank. you can only get, you know, if you want to get better at building lists, you have to build lists. And if the problems aren't out there yet, then you can create them. And it means that you're better prepared when those problems present themselves.
But are you assessing that into the new info from the new tomes, or are you doing it kind of much more generally?
Generally, yeah. Like that I'd say that's in my downtime. Like sometimes at night, if I can't sleep, I'll be like, oh fuck, right, okay, I've got to make a Slaanesh list with Glutos. I've got to make him work, and I've got to get up and actually create a list. And I think to myself, all right, what does Glutos do? He's got a massive bubble of -1 to hit within 12 inches. Well, that sounds really nice. Oh, I think I'll put some fiends next to him. How can I maximize fiends, you know, and Glutos, etc., etc.? And then, you know, that's not necessarily like a top tier wonderful list, but it might be at some point. And I'll have that in my head, you know, prepared already. I've got thousands of stupid lists like that.
I've seen you in pain with how many lists you used to have go around your head.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Honestly, I kid you not, we used to have, before the days of like list builder and apps and stuff like this, we had dedicated notepads. And yeah. The amount of times, even my own notepad, I would see Darren's written like 5 lists in the back of it because he couldn't find a bit of paper. And he would have written it down and I'd be like, what are you doing, Darren? He's like, oh, that's where I put it.
I like those days because you drew little maps as well with your deployments.
Yeah.
But with that, Darren, are you then... So I guess that's a nice way of learning all these new changes in the new tomes. But are you writing lists for every tome?
I've got lists for every tome, yeah. But like you can have your focus time. And if you've got downtime, you can have casual enjoyment time. If you don't enjoy writing lists, then don't fucking bother. Like, life is too short. Get other people to solve it. If you enjoy, you know, playing the game, you don't have to be, you don't have to approach it the way I approach it. You know, that's a point that I would like to make. You know, there's find your be the river, you know, get to the sea as quick as possible. And, you know, just because one person goes that way doesn't mean you need to. But for me, how I keep confident at a table, how I keep, you know, as up to date as I can be with this swarm of information that's coming in, I will focus on when a new tome comes out. If I have the time to, I will focus on it and I will try to write the best lists I possibly can. I will do that initially in isolation. So going back to right at the start when I said I don't listen to any content creators or anything like that, after I've gone through that process, I absolutely will get everyone else's opinions because I'm not the fucking center of the universe and I'm not always right. But the vast majority of the time I'm fucking wrong. But it's still...
You've changed.
Sometimes I've found a GM that other people haven't. You know, and that yeah. to me is particularly satisfying. Sometimes other people find gems, and you like Jeremy, who beat me last year with the Fire Slayers and the all the Grimwraths. It looked so fun, and when I actually thought about it, and we had a little chat with him afterwards, I was like, yeah, this fucking works. And he was using Gotrek, and I thought, well, I'm going to try this, but I'm going to try it with the Prime. And lo and behold, it took me to 5-0. If I was so egotistical that I couldn't possibly like admit someone else had a better idea than me, then you'll limit yourself. So if you see other, you know, accept that other people have got better ideas than you as well.
And Team Jeremy, Jeremy is one of the Team US guys, right? Is that right?
Yes, yes. I would attempt his surname, but I'd butcher it, but it's a beautiful one. He's one of the chaps on Team America. He's someone that's able to use all sorts. You know, he does some exceptional content. You should check it out on his Twitter.
He's got a YouTube channel as well, I think. I forgive me, Jeremy, I can't remember the YouTube channel, but there is one and I've seen it before and it is very good.
Okay. It's exceptional. Very, very good. And again, but he comes at the game from a completely different perspective than me.
But this is the point, though, isn't it? This is like, so Jeremy's got his one. you've got your one, I've got my one. We've all got like massively different perspectives on how to come at it, but we're all doing us.
Yes, yeah, and you're only going to find you if you actually try, rather than just copy everyone else. So, you know, read the tome yourself, create your own list, see what works for you. I had a patron the other day ask me, oh, right, the OBR tome's come out. Are you going to help me write a really filthy, horrible list that I'm going to destroy the world with? I was like, yeah, absolutely. He's like, okay, great, what is it? And I was like, well, first of all, go read the tome. And he went, what? Go read the tome. don't listen to any content creators when it comes out. Read the tome and then tell me what you think's good. And he came back to me with, this is good. I think this is good. This is good. Okay, brilliant. Right. Can we write this list now? Yeah, absolutely. Go off, write me a list. Do you know what I mean? And he was like,
no, you're not to tell people about our session. God damn it.
But here's my point. Like, I want to know what sings to you. And then we can work with your ideas. And honestly, it becomes a lot. That's a quicker route to understanding yourself than just waiting for everyone else to solve things over and over again. The trouble with that is as well, by the time you get it to the table and you've used someone else's idea, other people have solved what's been solved. So that's why you're susceptible to being a step behind the meta. So if you can create something that's slightly different, that sings to you, that works with your play style, with your limitations, etc., and that is yours, I think you're far more likely to eventually 5-0 than if you continually just use the best things that everyone else is using.
And there's one more sweet spot to that as well. Mm-hmm. When you do hit that 5-0, no one can sit in the shadows going, I wrote that list.
Yeah, well, fuck them anyway. And if you exactly. do in someone else's list and you go 5-0 and someone says that, fuck off. Fuck them.
Yeah, but you know what I'm talking about, Daz.
No, I do. I'm just saying, like, I'm not saying I'm not trying to cast dispersions on that approach, because all approaches are valid. But I think if you're someone that's starting out on that journey, you'll get there quicker than if you just, you take the net lists all the time.
Mm. It's about
with net listing, because some people just don't have the fucking time.
It's supposed to be fun as well, though, right?
Like 100%.
This whole Warhammer thing is supposed to be fun. And like, I don't know, I think...
Who told you that?
Oh, I don't know, some idiot a while ago. I haven't found the fun yet.
It was Simon, wasn't it?
It was Simon, yeah. As he pushed 21 spawn into me. He was like, this is fun, isn't it?
It's the fundum himself.
No, so I was going to just, like, I've been listening a lot. By the way, Jeremy's YouTube channel, if you just search for Barak Dur, which is...
Yes.
Barak Dur, D-U-R. If you, you'll find that, and he has some really interesting thoughts. I spent a 3-hour car journey with him once, and really interesting. Smart dude. He's just done a video about... deployment by missions, which is...
Yes, I saw that one. It's good.
Yeah. So side note. But no, I think the feeling I'm getting from what everyone's been saying really is like, I think that if you do just solely go off what you think is a good list, then it can be quite a hollow experience, because you're not necessarily... You haven't found the thing that you like and then built upon it. It's a bit like, I don't know, bands or food or movies or anything. People can tell you how fucking amazing, some series is, but it just might not chime with you. You know, there might be something that just doesn't...
Yeah, sometimes you eat that protein cereal and you just fart all night. That's
exactly
what
happens. Yeah.
Well,
never sometimes again. You eat that cereal too fart all night.
I was Googling what was the Guinness World Record, and unfortunately there isn't actually an official Guinness World Record.
What, for most amount of farts in 24 hours?
Mm. There's one for the longest, which is 2 minutes, 42 seconds. But...
Whoa.
Here's the educational content you all came here to listen to.
Can we get back to the point? I was going to make a really good point there.
Sorry, Owen, back to the point.
No, I don't know if I was going to make a really good point. I was going to do the sort of thing where I think that I'm saying something of value, and then I sort of taper out. I might. I think that's my...
Owen, often you say things that are valuable, brother.
Thank you very much.
You are very worthy.
Thank you very much. So, yeah, I think the feel I'm getting is that, touching on what you said, Darren, it's like the book lands in your, you know, through the letterbox on the day of the, you know, and don't go straight out and just hear everyone else's opinion. I know that I said I do hoover up, but that's more of a, I hoover up information, but that's more of like a, I don't necessarily do that with the books that I really love. I just do that to get a feel for the ecosystem. But if you kind of go, oh, I really like this artifact and this sub-faction, like, I don't know, minus one damage for all of my Hecatos dudes sounds really cool. Like, I do this often. I'll do something, like I'll write a list, and then someone smarter than me will just basically, I'll send it to a few people and they'll be like, ah, take this out, take that out, blah, blah. But the core, like what you want to put on the table, the models you want to see and the interactions you want to do, especially like, I don't know, like you want to do a god model list, you know, you want to put Nagash on the table. It's like, I want to do that. And then how am I going to, you know, build around that? And that's where you can lean into lots of other voices. But I think you're right. I think you have to really like the army and like how it plays and like the path to victory and, you know, the models. Christ, I know we get a bit down the tunnel of, you know, competitive and, you know, thinking about tournament play and talking about, you know, pushing for the 5-0s, but we are just building and painting models that we like. And I really like what you were saying, Chris, about how you kind of, you've got your faves and you always want to make them work. So I think that you have to listen to your emotions and, you know, let that drive you just as much as whether it hits some wounds on twos and it's got minus four end and, you know, 46 damage, you know, like if it's a dog shit model and it moves 2 inches and it's really hard to line up and I don't know, then it doesn't matter how good it is, right? It has to be attractive to the way that you want to, because playing the game is like, I don't know, it's like playing a musical instrument or something. It's like, you know, it's this thing that we're always learning how to do. So you want to enjoy the process. That, I think that's all I wanted to say. There we go. I've done.
That's a good analogy. If you put the same bit of music in front of someone and have four different people play the same instrument, each one's going to play it differently, right?
Definitely. And like any kind of artistic endeavor, like my dad was a retired arts professor. And, you know, it's like you kind of learn the core, like you learn how to draw and then, you know, then you can go off and do some kind of like Jackson Pollock is like could draw and paint traditionally, but he ended up going down a route of being very abstract by the end and having this very like, you know, physical way of painting, you know, very gestural, all the splashes and the kind of, you know, those motifs. But like he knew how to sit down, you know, draw a human figure or draw a, you know, a bowl of fruit before he went crazy. So similarly, like you've got to lock in all those core learnings, understand what you like, and then you can go completely freeform.
Yeah.
Much like that as well, you'll be able to understand other people's perspectives much more.
Definitely. Yeah, and I think like you were saying, Darren, I really like what you said. God, it seems like a long time ago now, but how, you know, you play 75% of the game with an army that you really like and you love and is your thing, and then you flip the script on things. It's like, well, I went from putting loads and loads of models on the table, and then I ended up with, like, the Reign of Stars, which was like you were saying about your Grimwrath list. I think Reign of Stars was maybe, like, 20 models, I want to say. Mm. And, you know, it was a very different exercise. So, again, you know, talking about it like musical instruments, you know, you might, you know, play guitar most of the time and then just one time be like, ah, oh, I'm going to, you know, have a little bash on the drums.
I'm going to pay some saxophone for that jazz.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, your guitar playing kind of like, you know, high elf player, and then you just go and hit some drums and, you know, play ogres.
I mean,
sometimes you discover absolute gold as well.
Oh, you do, because you play the army maybe differently to how it's intended to be played, you know. Yes.
My biggest finds have been through my emotional attachment, so I can list them. I actually know them all. So like my dwarf warriors, mm-hmm. they were found because my dad gave up Warhammer, so I picked up all these dwarf warriors.
Yeah, you had 40
and I used them. Yeah, put 40 down and they turned out to be amazing. I didn't even give them credit until I put them on the table.
What was different about your preconception versus playing them, Chris, if you go
for it? To be fair, like, there's an unwritten rule amongst us. So if someone in the group plays an army, we don't look at that. We don't think to play them. So my dad played dwarfs, so I wouldn't ever have looked at them.
Ah, I see.
Well, that sort of leads us, I guess, to our last bit, which is because as the time, we don't want you guys all listening to 4 hours of our of our waffle, but this leads to us to our kind of tips and our biggest tips and biggest mistakes. So I guess, Darren, if we stay with you, actually. So biggest tips or biggest mistakes for people when you see them looking at tomes and...
My biggest tip would be absolutely consume all the content you want, but just give yourself a chance right at the beginning. So try and take yourself away and just develop your own understanding of the game. And then go back and you can check it out against other people, you know? So that's my first tip. And I think that's so important. I've come out of all the faction-specific WhatsApp groups, for example, as well, because I think, for me, overall, they're a negative experience because they're just fucking noise. And the people are quicker to moan than praise. And when Zinch came out, you know, I had patrons that loved Zinch and they were really bummed out because all the WhatsApp factions were saying how terrible they were. They're fucking brilliant. Zinch are a really, really good fucking little tome. And I think that's quite common. So if you're someone that gets negged out by negative opinions, take yourself out of that situation, turn off the noise, and then go back once you've formulated your own opinions, and you'll see whether or not, and the people that you'll then learn as well which content creators are in sync with you, and then you can focus with them. So that's what I would do there. And then that's my biggest tip. Biggest mistake is, I'll reiterate, try not to bring any bias from a tome before with you when you're examining a new tome. When that tome came out before, it was in a completely different environment, a completely different GHB. There were you yourself were younger. Look at it. So with every new tome, my biggest tip is see it as brand new. Don't see it as the Seraphon tome. See it as the brand new Seraphon tome. Don't see it as the old KO. And then think about it in the context of where you are and where the scene is right now.
Yep. Perfect. Chris, biggest tips or mistakes for people when it comes to assessing tomes, assessing new changes?
So my best tip that I can give to someone is, for me, there's always something that jumps out in a book, whichever way you look or however you approach it, there'll always be something that jumps out in a book. Don't just go for that one. There'll always be a secondary thing in there. Every book I've looked at, there's always something else.
Keep looking.
So just keep going. Just keep looking, because there's always another build in it, or maybe two or three in some books, but there's always another build. Just don't look at it, and then as soon as that stops working, give up on it, because there is always more in a book, and so many people just give up. They see the first thing, someone finds the answer to it, and then they give up.
Yeah, perfect. Owen, biggest tip, mistakes? Changes, new tones.
I think I would just say, like, a lot of what has been said has been around, like, the idea of, you know, making things work around, like, the way that you like to play the game. So I think, you know, like, understanding what sorts of armies, and not getting, like, the whole FOMO and hype thing is real. Like, you know, they bring these boxes out and then everyone's talking about the latest thing and how it's going to be good. And, like, sometimes it's good to just be like, okay, I'm going to maybe learn about that a little bit, but I know it's not for me. So like, you know, if you like really, you know, slow, resilient armies that trade really well and, you know, like to fight in melee, then, you know, understand that, you know, X amount, like Caradhron Overlords, isn't going to be the book for you. And that's totally fine. You don't have to jump on the hotness. I think most of the things have been covered, really, and just like, forming your own opinions and stuff like that. And there is a counterpoint to like finding what you like and making it work, which is there has to come a point where you have to give up on the project if it's not working for you.
Kill your darlings.
Yeah, that's it. That's the one.
Sometimes the book isn't right for you. You might want it and it might be yours. It just might not like you.
Yeah.
It's a reciprocal relationship. You know, the book's got to give back to what you put into it.
Yeah, definitely. So I think going in with your eyes open is important, and like, again, without sounding too blasé, like, if you like the models, play with the models. You know, like, we don't play Warhammer on Twitter or WhatsApp or you know, in our heads or on Twitch or whatever. We play Warhammer in front of, you know, another human with a load of cool models that you spent ages
most of the time.
I play it in my head quite a lot, to be fair.
I was about to say, have you met Darren?
but the real deal,
Yeah, I know.
You know what you're saying, that you've mentioned previously in the past around how, seeing it on the table is different to reading it. And that can go always. So, you put yourself down in front of a Lumineth castle and they shoot you with, the sentinel shots. And you're like, oh, actually, they did 12 damage to me. That's okay. I can handle that. I'm going to run at you now and hope I win the double turn. Sometimes you can, there is a lot of noise and you can have opinions on things before you've even done it. So you can play the models you like and learn yourself.
Yes.
Playing games is the key. That would be my tip. Play games and stay off the internet a bit more.
Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Right. I think it's time to get on. It's time for our last section. So Darren, take it away.
The Chris Plays!
That's right. We've now got Darren doing puns. It's the Chris Plays, because obviously Chris is on the episode. So
I'm just going to clap myself. Thank you.
Well done.
So we're going to do some plays and misplays that we'll go around. So Chris, do you want to start us off? Play or misplay that you have?
Oh, I'm going to do a play. Go for actually, because it links onto what. I'm going to do a play. And this was one of my favouritest games, actually. So it leads on to too much information and stuff. So I was playing Sedge at Bobo back when Living City was just getting hot.
Mm-hmm.
And he had just brought out, what were they called? I forget the name of the book now. What's the Swamp People?
Crawl Boys.
Yeah, that's it. Crawl Boys with all the shooters.
Mm-hmm.
So we're playing last game in Bobo, and he's like, do you want to know about my army? Do you know anything? I was like, I don't know. He's like, well, should I tell? I was like, don't tell me. I said, tell you what, I'll ask you a direct question. If I don't give me like sub answers to it, you answer directly back. So if I say, does that shoot 4 shots? If it shoots 5, don't offer that out to me. Tell me no. Sort of thing. And that's how I played the game with him. Anyway, so it was a very cagey game. It was the mission, and you're probably going to know this, Owen, where the objectives, you roll the dice and they come down in that segment, whatever it was.
Now you're testing me. But yeah, I know the one you mean. It was something to do with Falling Stars or something.
It might actually be its name, Falling Stars. No? I don't know.
You've gone to pot now. You're seeing someone, Owen.
I know, mate.
The Owen that I heard on episode 1 would have known this.
Damn it.
So you're on this drop scenario, yeah?
So we're on this drop. And so he keeps on trying to offer me this information. I'm like, no, I don't want to hear it. So I've deployed like most of my army off the table that I was allowed to deploy off, and then had some cheeky stuff that allowed me to deploy a little bit more off. And all the way through the game, he's trying to offer out this information. I don't want it. And we're going backwards and forwards, and I'm sort of like asking direct questions. What's their range of shots so they can go 24? And then like, what's their movement? Oh, they can move 5 or 6 or whatever. And I had the best game, both like between me and him. We was laughing, jovial, and it was so like high spirited. And I'd also probably played the best I've ever played ever, to the point where I don't think he'd mind me saying this. I won the game by turn 3. With 700 points versus 2,000.
Wow.
And that's because I knew my game, knew what I wanted to do with my army, knew what it was meant to do, and got a little bit lucky where the deployment of the objectives were.
I want to just lean into that a little bit as well. This is one of the most common questions I get from people is how do you know what to do when you're coming up against a new faction and you don't know what it does? How do you stop that anxiety? How do you not go to shit? If you've got a really solid understanding of your own plan and your own army, then just try it. And if it doesn't work, then you can go back and you can tweak it once you've seen what the other army does. But don't think you have to always be responding to your opponent when new stuff comes out. You can still do your plan, your game will be a lot more comfortable if you're not always reacting. Don't panic, don't worry. What Chris has done there is he's gone, I don't care what you do, this is my plan. Yeah, and I'm sure if it hadn't worked, Chris would have been able to tweak it for the next time he came into that situation.
I mean, I don't know if that counts as a play or miss, whatever, but
no, but that makes sense. That's a good learning.
That was a Chris play.
It was a Chris play. I did say, no, I'm going to say this. I did say that misplays is how I play Warhammer. It literally is nothing but misplays done a lot of times with lots of options to play lots of misplays, and I'm going to get lucky.
Yeah.
I designed my games to get lucky.
The mission was, what was it called? Star Strike, by the way.
You just Googled that, didn't you?
Owen, misplay or play?
I'm going to give a shout out, even though it kicked my team in the balls a little bit at Blood Tithe, but I played against Rob Bradley, who's a lovely guy from South London Legion, been around for a long time. I hadn't seen him at a tournament for ages, to be honest with you, so it was really good to see him, and he was playing with Fact. He played Knights of the Empty Throne, Archeon, six Baron Guards, some knights, and a couple of little wizards, and some chaff, and I blew up most of his army with dwarves with guns by turn two. Mm. 15 Thunderers one-shotted Archeon. Yikes.
All right.
Yeah. So anyway, he got to his turn three and he had a Sorcerer Lord on foot. Okay. Mm-hmm. And over the course of a double, he managed to take an objective off 10 Arcanauts and 5 Thunderers. And then also score another objective and get his grand strategy all with a single model. Do you want to hear how he did that? It was amazing. So we're playing position over power, you know, where you've got your GCs on the flanks and they appears. So we go into turn three and he's got one Sorcerer Lord over there. Now he is the Tunnel Master and he hasn't used it. So what he does, I've swept the board, blown things up with boats. And I've, as I say, I've got 10 Arco and about 6 Thunderers left on my home objective. So he Tunnel Master's 9 inches away after giving himself all sorts of buffs, like +1 to charge from Eye of the Gods. He gave himself a 5-up ward, Mystic Shield. Basically, he was ready to fuck. He was going to come up and do something. Now, he either had an artifact or a command trait, which basically turned off all single and two-wound models on objectives.
Yeah.
So, Teleport 9 away, charges in, makes an 8-inch charge on the reroll, takes the objective off me, he's able to then, so that gets him his points. And then in the next turn, I finally managed to, Okay. So he makes the 8-inch charge. He kills a couple of dudes. It doesn't matter. He lives. Brilliant. He gets his objective. Now, because he's taken an objective off me, he gets to roll an Eye of the Gods again. Mm-hmm. He rolled a 6 and a 1. He's able to reroll one dice, rolls it into another 6. He turns, he turns his fucking Sorcerer Lord into a Demon Prince and gets his own strategy. So he got 5 points for his team and he turned like an 18-2 or 19-1 into a 15-5.
Fucking ball. That's beautiful.
So the amount of value he got, and it was very easy for him to just shake on that. But he was like, look, we've got an hour left. I've got one model. I'm going to get as much as I can out of this. So massive shout to Rob for an absolute play. I think I told like everybody that was around the table. I was like, did you just see what he fucking did? I mean, I'm a bit gutted that I didn't get like 18 points from a team, but that was insane. So a massive play from Rob. Big shout out to him.
That's great.
Great to see.
Thanks. Darren.
I have a misplay and a wonderful play, all from the same game from the Hants GT recently against Connor and his Mega Gargants. He had a really interesting list, actually. He used the Regiments of Renown, the shooters from the Crawl Boys. And after the game, I sort of asked why. And he was like, well, they're nice cheap screens. You normally don't play Gargants. You don't normally have cheap screens. You've normally got the best thing you've got as a screen is a little Gargant. So he was using them as screens. He was like running them forward, which I thought was super interesting. He went 4-1 at the Hants GT with Mega Gargants as well. I think that's really fucking good. This is going in my book of stupid fucking mistakes, and it involves redeploy again. So livid. In the first turn, it was Realmstone Cash, and he went first and took the objective. So I was like, I don't want to go too far behind because I'm not going to get any points off primary for a good couple of turns, although hold that thought. because that leans into my play. So I don't want to go too far behind on battle tactics, and there's very few I'm going to be able to do because he hasn't killed anything, so I can't get eye for an eye. All my little dwarfs are any sort of 4-inch move, so I see that I can get Desecrate. I can bring down my Rune Smiter and one of my little units. And then I've got this run and charge Grimwrath, because all the Grimwraths, I've got 5 of them, and they've all got different oaths. And that he's used his like big spear thing as like a scream. I was thinking, I can just run and take that out, and that'll get one of my Grimwraths further up the board. And if I get the double, that's going to get in there. It's going to swing. He's going to die. He's going to swing again. He's going to get some wounds on one of these Gargants to try and shift them off as quick as possible. And I fucking run him within 9 inches of all 3 of his fucking Mega Gargants because I'm a tit. And he just redeploys back to the piece of terrain. And obviously they count as 20. And I've got 6 models around that piece of terrain. It was really fucking stupid. I'm really, really sad. And I lost second to Russ by 2 points. So that cost me 2nd place because I had a stronger strength of schedule. So, not that it's kept me up at night, not that I'm bitter. But yeah, and speaking with Connor after as well, I was like, oh, so are you doing really well with them, Mega Gargants? And, you know, how are you trying to mitigate the fact that you're not this GHB, you're not getting a load of battle tactics? And he said, well, I don't get too many battle tactics, but my opponents don't either, you know, because a lot of them are kill something. It's fucking difficult. You don't always kill a Mega Gargant. You know, sometimes they get lucky. And it's difficult to get Desecrate because you can spread them about the board, can't you? And you can fucking redeploy if your opponent's a tit. So that was my misplay that I'm sad about. My crisp play is to get... I went all out for the double into them because I didn't want to get too far behind on the primary. And I also reasoned that I've got loads of these little units, so if I did miss it, I'm still going to be in the game. So I was quite happy to take the risk, but it pays off, and I managed to get into there was a Kraken Eater and a Gatebreaker on the Realmstone cache, and I managed to get a few shooting attacks into the Gatebreaker. The Prime was quite happily doing his whirly splat into him, etc. The Molten thing had gone off. So I'd taken it down to about 20 wounds, and I got a couple of Grimwraths in and my Runefather. I had this one Grimwrath on his own chasing down the Gatebreaker that had like 31 wounds left. Mm-hmm. So anyway, this chap throws an axe. The Gatebreaker's got 30 wounds left. This Grimwrath's oath is one that, as if you're wholly within 12 inches of an ally, you get +1 to hit, +1 to wound. Wonderful. He's got the Magmolt draft, which one use only doubles your attacks for a combat round. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. He's within 12 inches of my Runefather when my Runefather pops his +1 attack. So he runs into this Gatebreaker. I swing first with him. He's got 9 attacks, 2s, 2s. I've used the rune that gives you +1 rend in the from the Fire Slayer special runes that they get.
Yeah,
I've used the heroic
action. I've been snorting some gold to get it, yeah.
Exactly, and I've used the heroic action to give him a further +1. So he's runed, so he's 9 attacks, 2s, 2s, rend 4, damage 2. He swings, I don't miss any ones. Fantastic. So he's straight away, he's down 18 wounds. He's got 12 left.
Whoa. And then...
So I fucked him right up.
I can see where this is going. Yeah.
Then he swings into my Runefather with his Gatebreaker because my Runefather's quite tasty. But I've got another Grimwrath that's got a you can chin off wounds on a 3+ to them, basically. So he fails to kill my Runefather. Then I swing with my Runefather, and my Runefather does fucking shit tons of damage. Wonderful. So the second Gatebreaker, the Kraken Eater dies. And it's also died to the bodyguard on a 2+, got to swing and did a load of wounds as well. And then his Gatebreaker, I was really hoping this would happen, kills my Grimwrath Berserker. But on a 2+, they get to swing again.
Yeah.
And I was like, he was like, how many points is that? And he's like, there are 110 points, motherfucker.
And then you rolled a 1.
No. I fucking smashed them up. I really like to think of, you know, I imagine like Fire Slayers have got like something to the equivalent of Valhalla, let's say, right? And you imagine they're all in the drinking hall and they're like, oh, why did you come? How did you get here? Oh, I killed two goblins. Oh, well done, chap. How did you get here? Oh, I killed that fucking Durthu that's got the three up Ethereal save. Oh, yeah, well done. How did you get here, Timothy? I killed a fucking mega gargant, mate. Fuck off, you did. Yes, I fucking did.
After I got killed, yeah, exactly.
Do you know how I see the Fire Slayer? It's like Asterix and Obelix. That's how I see it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Asterix just went in and absolutely, and you know, this for me is why I play Warhammer. That moment's going to stay with me for eons. It was beautiful, like dropping two mega gargants in a turn and getting like the primary, you know, the realm, and getting me back into the game, making up for that fucking stupid error that I made earlier on. I didn't deserve to win that game. Sometimes you just get fucking lucky. So anything can happen in Age of Sigmar. So roll the dice.
Perfect. Perfect.
I do have a tip for anyone fighting against KO.
I thought you were going to say Darren then.
No. Anyone fighting against KO, if you happen to be filling a prime, right, just put it in cover, give it Mystic Shield, give it Finest Hour, and then all that defense. So when the Thunderers shoot you, you're golden.
Thanks. Thanks for that very specific tip, Chris.
It has to be the Prime.
The Prime loves KO. I defeated KO twice at the Hans GT. I had the Prime in my Fire Slayer list. I don't know how I fucking did it. But the Prime going off and hitting the boat does a fuck ton of mortal wounds. Beautiful.
Well, maybe we'll have to do a future Prime episode and then get you back. Right. My Chris play from a misplay. You like that? Chris play from a misplay.
Love it.
So I was playing a certain My Hill at a certain My Hill's house, naming no names, Rick. And Rick did something very, I think, very clever, which he clearly learned from playing with you guys a lot. I was using Evocators, I think, Evocators drop list. And we'd been talking, he was using his random chaos craziness as per usual. And we were talking about how the only unit in his list that could ever deal with the Evocators was the Chaos Sorcerer on Manticore. So we're having all this conversation, and it was in, I want to say Realmstone Cache, but that's not what it was called. It was the similar one to whenever it was two editions ago. And in deployment, he stuck it right out by itself in the corner. Just by itself. And we'd literally been speaking for at least 20 minutes about how it was the only thing that could get rid of them. And it stuck it right out by itself. And I did the classic, I'm too excited. My eyes lit up like a kid in a sweet shop. And I thought, what's he doing? I'm just going to kill it. So, of course, game starts. I come down and I kill it. I thought, oh, that's great. So, obviously, Rick does his classic Rick where he's just like, yeah, okay, fine, whatever. And what it meant because of the scenario was that that unit was now stuck in the middle of nowhere. And yeah, it got rid of the thing, but he got rid of them by putting them in a place on the board where they couldn't affect the game at all. And so they spent the next 2, 3, 4 turns trudging their way back towards any sort of objective. And by the time they got there, the game was already over.
Movement 4, baby.
Yeah, exactly. So that was my, that was my misplay, which led to my Chris play, which I played that same lovely gentleman at Blood Tithe who was using Slaanesh before Slaanesh. But after Slaanesh were good, but before they were good again. So in that middle period where they were generally one of the worst factions I've ever seen, and he was using that, and he did the same thing again with the one unit that could have done anything to me. And I remembered it, and I thought, you little bastard, you're trying to do exactly the same thing to me that you did last time. Well, I'm not going to fucking fall for it this time. And so that led to my Chris play, which meant I went the completely opposite side to it, cleared off the rest of it, and then he had the one unit left on its lonesome, not
you
doing anything.
The script on him.
Yeah, so I'd like to say Chris play from a misplay. Woo-hoo. There we go.
And from this, I must talk to Rick and he must rewrite his playbook.
I say thank you to Rick for that because then he. So that's it. That's the last section. So hope you've all enjoyed listening to our latest episode. And thanks, Chris, for coming on and giving your tips and tricks for everything. So, yeah, thank you very much.
It's great. Thank you for having me. Just hope you don't have to spend too long editing.
Always. It's fun. I enjoy it now. Thanks. Thanks, Darren. Thanks, Owen.
Thanks, love.
Thanks.
And again, thanks to all of you for listening, and thanks to all your comments on Twitter. I certainly enjoy reading them all, so please keep sending them in. So thanks, everyone. Be kind, look after each other, and we'll catch you all next time. So cheers. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.